Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Happy New Year, Cliff. Ethel, how you guys doing?
Awesome. Happy New Year, everybody.
Awesome. So another year, or starting another year, of A Just Cause Coast to Coast, and we'd like to give a couple of shout-outs, Cliff. Who we want to talk to?
Yeah, we want to give a shout-out to Scott Osborne and Duke Brooks of Contending for Truth. And Blog Talk Radio, they've been instrumental in helping us to have our spots that we do on Tuesday and Thursday night. And we wanted to make sure that they understood and knew that, we appreciate it. Also, we want to give a shout out to Don Miller, who spent the new year at home and will be spending 2014 at home with his family. We just want to let you know that we are happy about that, and best wishes to you and your family.
And Duke is with Conservative Nation Media, and then Scott is Contending for Truth, and so they've been very tremendous
Absolutely.
Supporters mm-hmm. of A Just Cause, and got us. Like you said, Cliff, donated some time to us, airtime, mm-hmm. so we could get this story out about the IRP-6 and also talk about all the other injustice that is going on in the land. And it's just, there is no shortage of that. That's an unfortunate thing that there's so much of that going on out there
these days.
Before we get any further, guys, let me give this disclaimer. Cliff, Ethel, and I are not attorneys, and A Just Cause Coast to Coast, it does not provide legal advice. Please contact your personal legal advisor for your legal needs. Opinions expressed by callers or guests do not necessarily reflect that of A Just Cause or A Just Cause Coast to Coast. Always, as always, we want to thank you for tuning in and choosing to spend the evening with us. Our call-in number this evening is 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. Ethel, mm-hmm. And folks can go out to our different websites and, mm-hmm. and find out information about A Just Cause and find out information about the IRP-6. Mm-hmm. And so, one of the places they can go to is freetheirp6.org. Right. Freetheirp6.org. You can find out information and follow along with us as we talk about the IRP-6 case.
Yeah.
You can also go to ajcradio.com or a-justcause.com. So, Ethel, in support of the IRP-6, what can folks do?
Yes, absolutely. In support of the IRP-6, and also, start the new year off right. Do something that make you feel good, that's going to do something for somebody else. We're asking you to pick up the phone and to call Eric Holder's office. He's the Attorney General for the United States. He's the High Sheriff. His number is 202-514-2003 and 2005, and ask him to just do something. Investigate what has taken place with this missing transcript for the IRP-6. We need his help now.
And, you know, Ethel, as you're talking about that, you know, we got to really stress that point.
Yeah.
That with the IRP6, and when they've been sitting in prison now for, what, 16 months?
Yes.
Well, actually, it's going
almost
on 17 months
absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely, yes.
And this is a wrongful conviction. These,
yes, it
our,
is.
Our brothers should not be sitting in prison right now.
Absolutely not.
And there are so many strong points for an appeal that, and one of them is the fact of this Fifth Amendment violation that occurred. And Judge Christine Arguello in the federal court system in Denver,
right.
You know, in, not releasing over
200 pages
of transcript.
That's right.
Within those 200 pages, mm-hmm. we believe and we know.
We know it.
That there is information there that's going to substantiate the fact that she violated their Fifth Amendment right. And that they should not be sitting in prison right
that's
now.
That's exactly right.
And so, you know, that's something. So, folks, you know, as Ethel said, call Eric Holder's office. Call his office in the morning because of the fact that we need to get a push going on there.
Yes.
Because no one should be sitting in prison when there's information that's available to exonerate him. I'm sorry, Ethel.
No, no. I just said I wouldn't want to. That's for sure.
Yep. And then also we got a petition going on change.org. On that petition, it's the same thing. We're pushing for mm-hmm. Attorney General Eric Holder to look into this situation
yes.
of these 200 pages that are missing.
Yes.
We know that Attorney General Eric Holder, he should be able to start an inquiry or an investigation or something into that.
Yes.
So please go out to change.org and do a search on IRP6 and sign that petition. After you sign it, we mm-hmm. started this a few weeks back. After you sign the petition, you know, put a comment in there as to why you signed that petition. Now, we have been off for the last couple of weeks, you know, the holidays and so forth.
Right.
But right now, that petition is at about 553. We're trying to get that number up. So, folks, as you're listening to the show tonight, go out there. If you haven't already signed that petition, please sign that petition. Ethel, what else
yeah.
can people do as far as trying to get the word out?
Yeah, we're also asking people to reach out to their local TV stations, their local radio stations. You know, tell these people, you know, you've heard the story about the IRP6 and these wrongly convicted men. What is going on here that they have not been talking about it locally? You know, this is a lot of information out there. If you were in their position, you would want somebody to hear your story. You would want to find out why isn't the media taking an interest in what's going on here. So we're asking you to reach out to your local TV and radio stations, different organizations that you may even know that maybe we have not even heard about. Let us know if there's an organization out there that you think might be able to help us.
That's right. And, you know, we have a major, major push going on as far as press releases and all that kind of thing. And so, you know, if we are reaching out to any media outlet that we could possibly reach out
yes.
to get this story out there. And so, you know, if you have a platform that we're on a national level
mm-hmm.
where you can help get this story out about the IRP6, we would greatly appreciate it. I mean, you know,
absolutely.
Again, we have six gentlemen who are currently sitting in prison who should not be there.
That's right.
And we need to get them home. Okay, so, I mean, we just went through a holiday season,
mm-hmm.
another Christmas.
That's right.
Where the guys were not at home with their families.
Yeah.
And I guess more critical than that is that their kids did not have their dads.
Absolutely.
And so we need to ensure that this thing is rectified and that is rectified quickly. So if you do have a national platform, you know, you can call into the show tonight or you can call our regular Just Cause line, which is 855-529-4252. 855-529-4252, and we would just love to hear from you. And you know, these are just the types of things that we always talk about it, Ethel, from the standpoint that if this is not happening to you,
right?
People tend to take the attitude that it is not happening.
Exactly.
And that is the wrong attitude. I mean, we have all been naive to what can happen in the judicial system.
That's right.
But we're no longer naive.
Oh, no.
And
oh,
we've
no.
been made aware. And so that's why A Just Cause and A Just Cause Coast to Coast is doing everything that we can as far as getting the word out about that. Now, you know, Ethel, one thing I know that you're working on mm-hmm. is working with the media.
Yes.
And we're talking about getting the word out on a just cause. Mm-hmm. And there have been some challenges there.
Yes.
So what's going on as far as the IRP6 having some access to the media?
You know what? And that is something that we are still working on. I mean, we are pushing hard. As far as the IRP6 and them sitting in prison right now, you know, the media has a tendency, and I was watching the show, you know, MSNBC Locked Up. They're going in the prison, you know, and they're interviewing these prisoners and people walking around and everything. They have access to this prison. Why is it in this prison camp in Florence, Colorado, the IRP6 does not have access to the media? I'm telling you, every request that they have put in has been denied by Warden David Birkebile at the prison, and for no reason whatsoever. I mean, this is some crazy stuff. Then he's going to have the nerve to ask these guys, why do you want your story told so bad? That's the dumbest question that I think anybody could ever be asked. You're sitting in prison. You are an innocent man. I want my story told. What is your problem, and what are you doing asking me why do I want it told so bad?
Exactly. And, you know, as a just cause, we are out there in support of the IRPC.
That's right.
You know, we're sending letters.
Yes,
and
we are.
We're saying, you know, these folks have media credentials.
Yes.
I mean, this isn't just some guy walking off the street.
And this is the thing, though, Sam. They have media credentials according to the program statement for the prison.
Absolutely.
For the BOP.
Absolutely.
Okay, and then they still are denying them. And, you know, they have this statement where Birkebile, David Warden, the Warden David Birkebile puts in there talking about for security reasons. Are you kidding me? You know, are you kidding me? What kind of security reasons? You're talking about on a telephone call.
That's right. That's right. And you know, and the guys should have the right to share their story, especially in a situation of a wrongful conviction where, you know, getting a story out there is going to open and shed light on the fact that there are some issues and that, you know, folks need to take note.
That's right.
I mean, I think it's almost one of those things, Ethel, that if you kind of sweep it under the rug, sweep it under the carpet, then, you know, people think that, well, it's nothing going on.
Yeah, yeah.
But one of the things in this situation, and you know, it's sad to say that usually what happens is that people end up going to prison.
Right.
And because the system is working against them,
exactly,
they don't have an opportunity to share their story.
That's
they
right.
don't have a voice.
That's right.
Their voice is pretty much shut down.
Yes.
But in this situation, it's not just going to be for the IRP6.
That's right.
We're going to be a voice for a lot of different people, as evidenced by, you know, different segments in our shows in the past. And we're going to actually talk about some of the exonerees that we've talked about before. You know, that's one of the things on tonight's show where we're going to, you know, recap some of the things we talked about in 2013.
Right.
As far as exonerees are concerned, some of the things that's going on with the IRP6.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about some things that we're looking forward to as far as 2014.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we got a lot of good things going on. You know, one person, and we'll be bringing Jay Arrington on here in a little bit, but I know Dr. Wilmer Leon.
Yeah.
You know, we were all on his program, and he's on Sirius XM, and that is a huge show.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Leon is a supporter of a just cause. He is a supporter of the cause for the IRP6.
Yes.
We were on his show on Saturday, December 7th.
Right.
That was a great show.
Yes,
Ethel,
right.
You and Pastor Rosebanks were on Dr. Leon's show a couple of weeks after that,
right,
on the 21st of December,
mm-hmm,
and that show was just incredible.
Yes, it was.
And so, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about that here in a moment as well. We're getting ready to go to a break here in a moment. And so, but we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to talk about something that's going to be coming up this weekend.
Yes.
And so, you know, folks, we want you to stay there. Don't go anywhere. We're going to take a quick break. And this is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. We'll be right back in a few moments.
I'm Nikki Palillo. I live in Bluefield, Virginia, and I'm a breast cancer survivor. 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, and last October, I became one of those women. thanks to early detection, I have a wonderful prognosis. I'm now one of the 98% who will survive. Battling cancer is not easy, but early detection, support from family and friends, wonderful doctors, and continuing research make the journey much more bearable. I'm a mother.
I'm a father.
I'm a sister.
A registered nurse. I serve my country in the United States military.
I'm your neighbor.
I sit next to you at church.
And my child was
arrested,
held in custody,
questioned without my knowledge,
exposed to violence,
witnessed to rape,
placed in solitary confinement,
unable to call or see me,
shackled to a wall,
beaten,
sentenced as an adult at age 17,
sentenced as an adult at age 16,
sentenced as an adult at age 15.
We felt lost,
isolated,
ostracized,
misjudged,
terrified,
and in the absence of all hope, my child took his own life.
And then I found the Alliance for Youth Justice.
They gave me the support and resources to get through one of the most difficult times in my life.
Now I know I'm not alone.
And neither are you.
Now we have a voice.
Now
we have power.
In numbers.
In numbers.
In numbers.
We can make a difference.
There are approximately 2 million children in the juvenile and criminal justice system in this country. These are the faces of those families. If you are the family member of a child who has been in the justice system, or if you are someone who supports this movement and is ready to make a difference, visit the Campaign for Youth Justice at www.campaignforyouthjustice.org.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness
are all courtesy of the heroic men and women of the United States military.
They give so much, and they ask so little.
I'm Joe Bontaine.
I'm Jack Scalia.
I'm Nick Searcy.
I'm Bonnie Jo Laughlin.
I'm Scott Elrod. Please help me thank our heroes by doing something.
Donate your time, talent, or gifts
to groups and organizations devoted to our troops and their families.
Visit a veteran's hospital.
A smile. A hug,
a shoulder, a handshake,
or even an attentive ear goes a long, long way.
Quite simply, give.
They'll sincerely appreciate it.
And it just might do wonders for you, too.
Remember, freedom isn't free.
Freedom isn't free.
Freedom isn't free. Get involved.
Give back now.
God bless America.
Soon it'll be all
be scared no more. No more fears and no more fright. We won't be scared no more because soon it'll be all over. Soon it'll be all over. Soon it will be all over. We won't fight no more. Real sweet.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. Our call-in number tonight is 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. Ethel, before the break, we talked about the fact that we were on Dr. Wilmer Leon's show.
Right.
At the beginning of December, and then you and Pastor Banks were on a couple of weeks after that.
Yeah.
You know, tell us a little bit about that experience. I mean, you guys, when you and Pastor Banks were on, and I believe that archive show is going to be made available to us here soon, that was just an awesome, awesome experience.
You know, it really was, and we're so grateful to Dr. Leon for allowing us to go on and talk about the case with the IRP6. And Pastor Banks and myself, you know, we had quite a bit to say about what's going on and talking about the different so-called civil rights leader, you know, who came up, you know, through the years with Dr. King, you know, before he was murdered. And they talk about, you know, so much about what they did and all this stuff, and they still run around, they use that title, you know, civil rights leader, activist, this and that. And we're on there, we're calling them out. That's what we were doing. We were calling them out for who and what they really are and letting people know, you know, these are not leaders. These guys have done absolutely nothing since Dr. King was killed. Absolutely nothing but sat back and rode on his coattail. You know, basically, that's what they did, you know?
And let's put a little foundation around that, you know. We were talking about, or you guys were talking about it, because of the fact that we had reached out to them.
Yes. You know, we have reached out to so many of them, and just to name a few of them, you know, John Lewis, we reached out to, who didn't want to do anything but show people his window with a view from his big office in D.C. You know, we reached out to Vernon Jordan, who told us, oh, yeah, what you guys are doing is exactly what you need to be doing, you know, and your voices aren't loud enough. You need to make them louder. You know, we're doing what he told us. You know, you need some marches. You need to knock down some doors. We did exactly what he told us to do, and then this man is going to call us in the middle of the march to tell us, you being silly. You are acting stupid out here. You need to pick up your stuff and go home. Are you kidding me? That's the kind of leader that we have?
And you know, Ethel, I think one of the classic moments during that show there was a guy, and I don't know why I remember this guy's name, but his name was Farrell. And he was calling in from Texas.
Look, did you say Pharaoh or Farrell?
No, not Farrell.
Okay, then.
But Farrell, and he called in from Texas, and I know you remember this moment because it just set it off across Sirius XM radio. Now, this guy calls in and says, you know, I disagree with these ladies. They shouldn't be, talking about our leaders like that, and they shouldn't be airing our dirty laundry and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, man, it just set it off, and folks started calling in.
Yes.
And this guy had to feel like a man on an island by himself.
This is the thing, though. When he said about airing our dirty laundry, right, and then Pastor Banks jumped on that one, she said, if you don't want your dirty laundry aired, you ought to wash it.
There you go. And you know, there was, and we pulled off some comments off of Dr. Leon's Facebook page.
Yes.
And you know, just some of the comments that folks really, really got into supporting you.
Yes.
And Pastor Banks. And here's one from Angela. It doesn't say where Angela was from,
mm-hmm.
but it says, these women you interviewed are so very admirable. They were just great. I so disagreed with the gentleman who was calling in chastising the ladies for going public with the difficulties they were faced with, talking about what you were just talking about, Ella.
Right, right.
And then it says, the so-called leadership seemed more concerned about keeping the status quo going, and trying not to rock the boat. And that's all you were exposing.
That's it. That is it. You know, and speaking of that, you know, as far as the comments goes, we have one here from a Willie Hicks, right? And Willie says, while listening to Inside Issues with Dr. Wilma Leon, I heard about the IRP6. He Googled it. He said, and the two ladies were speaking about the trouble they were having with getting help from a member of Congress. He said, a man, and in parentheses, a house boy, called in and said, we should not be airing our dirty laundry in public. And he said, one of the ladies on the show said, forget about airing our dirty laundry. We need to wash our clothes.
There you go.
I couldn't agree more.
And then here's another one, and then we'll talk about something that's coming up this weekend. There's a Melinda Jones, and Melinda said that, and these are comments that actually came in after. I understand, you know, comments are still coming in after that show. But here's one that Melinda wrote, and she said, Dr. Leon, I admire and respect you more than you will ever know. I'm glad that you don't compromise. I'm glad that you have the courage to air our dirty laundry and speak out regardless if it is popular or not.
Yeah.
You epitomize what a black man is all about. Keep walking the steps of Malcolm, Martin, and Nelson. Keep up the good work.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's all because of the fact that, you know, Dr. Leon, he brought, you know, a just cause on. And, you know, even before that, and that is the previous shows are currently archived where, you know, Dr. Leon had you,
mm-hmm.
Cliff, myself, Pastor Banks,
right.
Mark Garagos, had a couple of the IRP6, had David Banks on, had Gary Walker on.
Yes.
And so, you know, that show, I think we had two
that
hours then.
Awesome.
And that was just great. And then you guys came up behind it.
Yes.
And now this weekend, what's going to be happening,
goodness.
Ethel?
Oh, my gosh. This weekend, Dr. Leon will be having Pastor Rose Banks, the mother of one of the IRP6, David Banks, and the mother-in-law of Gary Walker. And I'm telling you guys right now, you don't want to miss it. She's going to lay down the law and tell them how to go find it.
Oh, man. I, as the pastor sometimes say, you better hold on to your seat.
All right.
You know, and it's like, she won't be holding any punches. I mean, and people got a
never
a,
does.
Folks got a preview of that when you and the pastor were on a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
And so this time is going to be Pastor Banks along with Dr. Leon.
Yes.
And that show is going to be airing this Saturday.
Yes.
That's January 4th, 2014. Got to get used to that 14. January 4th, 2014, Saturday. And that's at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Sirius XM Radio 110, I believe that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's 9 a.m. Mountain Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time. So you definitely don't want to miss that at all. Again, our number is 347-205-9620, 347-205-9620. When we come back from the next break, we're going to be talking about some of these crazy stories that are out there that are in the news. You know, we always have to bring that up and just share some of our thoughts about those because we want to ensure that folks understand that this craziness is out there. So A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We will be right back in a moment.
Police Department.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
A dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie.
I think the hoodie is as much responsible for Trayvon Martin's death as George Zimmerman was.
Do I look suspicious?
Do I look suspicious?
Am I suspicious?
This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining, and he's just walking around looking about.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
You have to recognize that this whole stylizing yourself as a gangster, you're going to be a gangster wannabe. Well, people are going to perceive you as a menace.
I am here to continue the research to fight cancer.
To protect and serve.
To prosper in real estate.
I am here to be a pediatrician.
I'm here to protect my children and my grandchild.
To fight for justice.
To write the next great American movie.
To give a voice to the voiceless.
I'm here to foster a generation of young black entrepreneurs.
I am here to live.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Trayvon Martin.
We are Trayvon Martin.
It's time to wake up. This could happen to you.
Sergeant Michelle Garcia served meritoriously in Iraq and has the medals to prove it. Soon after leaving the Navy, Lieutenant Chris Scott found a job, a home, and started a family of his own. Corpsman Richard Stokely took the skills he learned in Vietnam and put them to good use as a paramedic. But soon after leaving the military, each of these veterans fell on hard times and faced homelessness. Even after Michelle lost all her savings, even after Chris wasn't able to pay his mortgage, and even after Richard battled alcoholism for years, they each reached out for help when they needed it most. A simple phone call put them in touch with a trained professional from the Department of Veterans Affairs. That call got Michelle a place to stay until she could afford one of her own, put Chris in touch with employment assistance, and found Richard a substance abuse program. These veterans are success stories not only for how they were able to help others while serving their country, but for how they were able to let others help them. If you know of or are a veteran in need, make the call.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. It's 2014, y'all. A new year for A Just Cause Radio. You know, welcome to the new year, and hopefully everyone had a good holiday season, and things went well for everyone.
Gain 15 pounds.
Yep. I understand, man. And you know, things went well all except for one thing. We still have six brothers that are sitting in Florence prison camp in Colorado who should be at home.
That's what's
And so
important.
That's why we are going to keep pushing for the IRP 6. Tonight, our call-in number is 347-205-9620. 347-205-9620. So what's in the news, Cliff and Ethel? There's some crazy stuff going on.
Well, we got this one, this article in the LA Times about a Texas ex-prosecutor sentence sends warning on wrongful convictions. And we dealt with this story before. It's that prosecutor Ken Anderson out of Williamson County. He's a district attorney, and of course, you know, this is in Texas. It's
favorite.
Houston this time, you know.
So. Hey, no offense to Scott Osborne, he's gonna be a new resident in Texas.
Yeah,
Scott is gonna go there and clean it up.
Yeah, your new state will give you a lot to talk about.
But anyway, this
is with that district attorney Ken Anderson. He ended up spending 9 days in jail, had to resign from the bench and surrender his law license. So he can no longer be a judge. He can no longer practice law. And he spent 9 days in jail. Well, what happened with this is they found out, you know, Michael Morton got convicted of murder of his wife before they had these DNA tests that exonerated him. Well, what they found out is that while this district attorney, Ken Anderson, was a prosecutor on the case, he wrongfully, you know, withheld evidence intentionally. So they ended up, you know, basically using this case against him. And, you know, Morton served 25 years in prison for this murder. He got 9 days. It, you know, that sucks.
There's something. Yeah,
that sucks.
Something's not
you
right
know,
about that.
25 years and 9 days. That's why, you know, we say that the law should be changed. Say, hey, day for day, year for year. You caused me to spend 25 years in prison. Ken Anderson, you did it on purpose. You intentionally withheld evidence that resulted in a wrongful conviction of Michael Morton. You should spend 25 years in prison. That's the way I see it. Well, you guys are probably thinking, well, why are you guys bringing this story up? What's the good part of this? Well, the good part is that the Texas legislators, they passed what is called the Michael Morton Act.
Right.
This act, which you would think this piece would already be in the books, and I was shocked when I looked at this, because it's now requiring prosecutors to share evidence favorable to the defense. And this procedure is known as the open file policy. Yeah, it's already in place in so many other places, but our favorite towns in Texas, they just implemented this. So, you know, if Texas can go ahead and get on the bandwagon with, you know, the right stuff, add to what they're doing to try to, you know, fight against wrongful convictions and things of this nature, then, hey, let's join them, Eric Holder, and do the things that are right. But, you know, you got to try to find the good in all of it. So Texas did pass this Michael Morton Act. Now they can say, well, if you break this Michael Morton Act as a prosecutor, you can go to jail. And, yeah, this guy
went
to jail. But for
how long?
He went to jail for 9 years. Yeah, that's the part.
Nine days.
9 days. I'm sorry. Yeah, 9 days. D.A. Ken Anderson went to jail for 9 days. That's the part you need to work on.
Yeah.
This 9 day stuff after I spent 25 years in prison, that's not cutting it. Yeah, that's great. And then the part that kind of made me kind of sick was when it says Anderson agreed to serve 9 days.
Exactly.
What do you mean agreed?
That's right.
He should not have been given a chance or opportunity to agree. He should have been shackled. He should have been put in a jumpsuit.
Yes.
He should have had all his dignity stripped from him for causing the man to go to prison for 25 years.
That's right.
So, you know, you got to try to pull something good out of this.
And you know what, too, Cliff, with that? They're talking about, you know, his law license were revoked and all this kind of crap. This man can go out and he can do something else. He can
That's
get a career
right.
doing something else.
Exactly.
You know?
That's right.
He can be hired by somebody, anybody out there. You know, he has the education and all this other stuff behind that. But look at Mr. Morton, who spent 25 years in prison, you know, and is he going to be able to get a job as easily as Ken Anderson will?
And you know, Ethel, that's a good point, because I was actually going to piggyback right off of that from the standpoint of, okay, you have a former judge, a former prosecutor,
and
he got caught, you know, doing wrong, so they sent him to 9 days
slapped
in
him
jail,
on the wrist.
And he had to give up his law license, and he had to he's no longer on the bench,
right?
But like you said, Ethel, and we need to follow this one, because I guarantee you, like you said, Ethel, this guy is going to show up as a highly paid consultant somewhere.
You know it.
Now, you know, at least to our knowledge, there are no restrictions on him doing that. So he's going to be a consultant somewhere. Someone's going to snatch him up, and he's still going to have his livelihood. He's probably going to make more money than he did when he was sitting on the bench.
Exactly.
And the thing is that I would also like to know is, if he is tagged as a felon.
That's right.
Did they give him basically, you are a felon, you spent 9 days in jail, and, you know, it's like, I bet you a cup of coffee, and everybody here knows how how I enjoy coffee, this man is not tagged as a felon. I guarantee they did not give him a felony for this. When they said he agreed to serve those 9 days, he probably agreed with the thing that, hey, you don't tag me as a felon, and I'm still able to, you know, live my life. I just won't be a judge or a prosecutor. But like you said, Sam, he'll go be a high paid consultant. He'll write some books. He'll probably advise the DA's office there in his Texas town, in Williamson County.
And you know, those are the kind of things you know, like you said, Ethel, when a guy gets out of prison, conditions of his probation or his parole and all kinds of stuff, you know, it's like, well, you can't do this and you can't do that. And if you do this, you need to call this number. And if you do this, you need to report to this guy and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And so the same type of restrictions need to be put on on this man.
Even just the fact that people know this man was in prison, whether he was wrongly convicted or whatever, just the fact that they know he was in prison, you know, they put stipulations and restrictions towards him and different things like that, you know, as far as not hiring him because of this or because of that. That's crazy crap.
It sure is.
Yeah, because just like we heard when we talked to one of the Central Park exonerees that, you know, people still look at them as like, you've been exonerated. Mm-hmm. It's been proven that you did not commit this crime.
Yep.
And yet people look at them, threaten them, say how, you know, they're going to retaliate for what they did to this to the woman that they got wrongly convicted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, but we didn't do it. But the fact that they spent time in jail, that they basically rammed their names through the mud as far as the media when all of this was going down, and that, you know, the mayor or the governor,
mm-hmm.
they're just basically, you know, tagged them as terrorists.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
now their whole lives are destroyed, and, you know, good old Kenny Anderson,
mm-hmm.
nothing happens to his livelihood. People aren't
That's
threatening
right.
him for having this man put in prison for 25 years. And, you know, thankfully the LA Times at least put an article
That's
out
right.
about it
mm-hmm.
to let people know that, hey, this prosecutor was caught. They did do something.
Yeah.
But it is not to the effect of what happened to Michael Morton. He served 25 years
That's
in prison.
Right.
Wow.
You know what, Sam? I wanted to say one other thing to that. You know, like the IRP6, they're in prison, and their families are basically in prison along with them.
That's
you
right.
You know, they are limited as to what they can do. And it's the same way when these guys come out, like Michael Morton. You know, how are they looking at his family? You know, because he, you know, this is his family. You know, this is that. They're putting the families down as well.
That's
the
right.
The families are being ran through the mud. Probably some of them may not get a job because of this same situation. You know, you have to be mindful of what is going on when you're doing this stuff to these people and sending them to prison on wrongful convictions. And then you sit back and you feel like you've done this great justice, you know, to society, you know, everything as well. You just took somebody's life away.
And Ethel, you know more than anyone in this room as far as the impact of something like that has on the children.
I'm telling you.
And as you know, you got kids that are having to explain or trying to almost not explain.
Exactly.
You know, well, where's your dad?
You know,
Yeah,
and it kills you when you look in these kids' faces and somebody is talking about them. You know, even if the other friends are talking about their fathers. You know, and he doesn't want. You know, this kid doesn't want to say, well, my dad is in prison. You know, whatever. This crap is for the birds.
It definitely
is. You know,
it definitely is. And then when you, you know, I look at the IRP6.
Yeah.
And Cliff and I, we were on a conference call earlier today, and we won't go into detail on that, but. During that call, we were talking about how, you know, when the IRP6 were immediately remanded into custody, and they spent 42 days, you know, in the county jail mm-hmm. or the city jail in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And then after going before a magistrate and fighting to get release on bond pending sentencing,
mm-hmm.
They had to go through this stuff as far as, you know, wearing the ankle monitors and so forth.
Yeah.
But never once did they violate anything associated with that. But
exactly.
at the same time, there was this stigma of, well, you got to do this, according to how we say do
right.
it. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and this kind of stuff is just, you know, where people need to just, you know, become aware,
mm-hmm.
and those are the kind of things we're going to be talking about more of that as the year goes on with A Just Cause Coast to Coast and just exposing those kind of things and using stories just like this to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a break. There is one other story I want to talk about when we get back from that break, and then we're going to talk about some of the other things as far as the Just Cause and IRP6. This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. It's 2014. I'm here with Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez. I'm Sam Thurman. We'll be right back after this.
Of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number 1 on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
I was 18 and... sold drugs for money. Didn't want to live on the high. Ran away with drugs in my pocket. Hoping cops would catch me. No place to go. All I wanted to do was steal drugs, collect that money, and burn. I had no hope for nothing at all. Didn't care for anything or anyone. After doing some time, I was ordered to do probation.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
Do something good for your community.
Reuse bags and bottles and always recycle.
Help us collect 1 million pounds of food.
Help people prepare for natural disasters.
Do something about homelessness.
Anyone could be a rock star in their community.
So then do something.
Do something.
Do something.
Do something.
Visit dosomething.org to find out.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. This is our Thursday evening edition of Just Cause Coast to Coast. Cliff Ethel. So we're talking a little bit about some of the craziness that's in the news. We got this one other story, and then we'll move on.
Mm-hmm.
Were you guys able to pull this one up about Weldon Angelus?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
That's awesome.
That is
so
insane.
So you got a guy who is in his ninth year of a 55-year prison term for selling $350 worth of marijuana and allegedly carrying a gun. Even the judge in this case, and we're going to call this one our conservative champion's commentary. This is going to fit that category as far as this one is concerned. But the judge in this case even said, and his name is Paul Castle, he said that he called the punishment cruel and unusual, unwise, and unjust. A judge is saying that.
Definitely.
And this goes to one of the things, Ethel, that I know you, and it's near and dear to all of our hearts as far as this mandatory minimum stuff.
Yes.
And, you know, when you look at a situation like this, 55 years?
That's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
And just reading the you know, this statute, this guideline that gives that gave this guy this stuff, it is sickening. Just they call it a 924C stacking guideline. And although the judge, you know, made the comments that they did, when you look at what the prosecutor did, they said that the sentence can be determined off of the number of times basically that the police set you up. So if they get you, like, okay, well, you bought $10 worth of marijuana, that's one count. We're going to give you 35 counts and then stack those on time on top of each other so that if you get the minimum sentence for drug possession, and then the crazy thing with this, they said, well, the prosecutor said he was carrying a gun. The informant didn't say. The informant didn't say he was carrying a gun. The police officer didn't say he was carrying a gun. They presented no evidence that he was carrying a gun. But the fact that he got convicted for selling $350 worth of marijuana, they stacked the gun charge on top of that, which says you have to give a minimum sentence for a drug dealer that's suspected of being in a gang. Mm-hmm. You have to give them a stacked sentence for carrying a firearm. It's totally sick. But if you say, okay, well, we got you committing the crime. You sold the marijuana once, mm-hmm. but we go back and do it again and again mm-hmm. and again and mm-hmm. again to make sure we can stack all of these charges up on you. Now, ugh. They're saying that this stacking charge is supposed to be applied to repeat offenders. But, I mean, this is nothing more than entrapment.
That's the
bottom line. If you're committing a crime and the police see you committing a crime and they don't stop you, then they're entrapping you by continuing to come back to you. It's like, is your goal to stop crime or to put people in prison for 100
that's
years?
That's the truth.
And, you know, in no way do we endorse, you know, drug dealing,
right.
illegal guns.
That's right.
Marijuana
that's
is legal right. in the state of Colorado. For medicinal purposes.
But you do not use.
You can't be advertising that. Cut it out.
I do not use marijuana. I do not sell marijuana. I do not advocate the use or sale of any illegal or controlled substance.
Now, with that disclaimer, this is still ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
You know, as far as a man, 55 years in prison
you know
for something like that.
29 former judges and prosecutors filed a friend of the court brief beseeching Weldon's sentencing judge to declare the sentence unconstitutional. And then the judge wrote a 67-page opinion urging President Bush at the time to commute the man's sentence to 18 years or less, and none of the efforts proved fruitful.
Wow.
None of it. That's horrible.
Even the judge, they said the judge wrote that the jury would have been shocked to learn of this stacked sentence. Quote, I think they would rise up in indignation as anybody else would if they knew about how this law is being applied and construed in circumstances such as this, which is essentially one underlying offense. Now, when the judge says this man committed one offense, you stack all these up on top of him, give him a mandatory gun charge, then say he was suspected of gang involvement. What does that have to do with the crime he committed? You can
exactly.
say okay, well, he's suspected to have shot down a an airplane in between Iraq and Iran. What does that have to do with the fact this man was selling marijuana to a police officer? That has nothing to do with it. You prosecute people on what is proven, on what they did, on what you have evidence for, not on you were suspected of doing something. If that's the case, you can suspect anybody who does anything. Like, well, He jaywalked. Well, we suspect he committed a murder over in Kansas City. What does that have to do with anything?
Exactly. And, you know, as far as task forces are concerned, and we've heard folks say, hey, as soon as Congress sets up a task force, you know, not much else is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in this situation, let's hope and pray that they are going to do something. And so, you know, there is the over-criminalization task force, and it's headed up by Republican out of Wisconsin, Jim Sensenbrenner, and then also Democrat out of Virginia, Bobby Scott. So, you know, that was set up around the summer of last year, 2013.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we're only a couple of days into 2014. So it kind of sounds weird to say last year, but it was in 2013, mm-hmm. in the summer, they set up the over-criminalization task force. And that is specifically to look at these laws that are on the books. And they say they're like the U.S. Code includes 4,500 criminal laws. And you know, they're taking a look at a lot of this stuff that need to be reformed and where they just need to take another look at it. So enough of that. I want to give a shout-out to Jay Arrington of the Maryland Daily Examiner. Jay has been writing a lot about the IRP6. Go to the Maryland Daily Examiner, take a look at that. Also, David Banks, one of the IRP6, he just recently wrote an editorial, if you will, a commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And David is calling this double-minded. And he is really breaking it down as to, you know, what happened in their case from his perspective and from the IRP6 case, from the IRP6 perspective. We're going to be posting that on our websites. We spoke to Jay today. And he's going to they're going to be working to get that posted on the Maryland Daily Examiner.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Reggie Kearney, the publisher of the Maryland Daily Examiner, He's coming out with a magazine. That magazine is going to be published around the February, March time frame as of right now. And so and in that magazine, Reggie and Jay have already committed to publishing a lot of the information about the IRP-6. And so, Ethel, you know, going back to our earlier conversation as far as the media is concerned,
yeah,
you know, that's the kind of support we're looking at.
Absolutely.
You know, you got people who are looking at situations like, and even Dr. Wilmer Leon.
Yes.
Folks see this kind of thing and they say, no, we need to fix this. That's Ethel, before
right.
we went on the air, you were telling me a story about the director of the BOP, Charles E. Samuels Jr.
Yeah.
And that he had written a letter on behalf of an inmate. Now, we've written many letters to Director Samuels.
Yeah.
And so that right there tells me that this man, he can also, we talk about Attorney General Eric Holder a lot.
That's right.
The director of the BOP,
mm-hmm.
he can take some action too. Ethel,
yeah.
What happened in that situation? And we're going to, you know, continue to push Director
right.
Samuels on behalf of the IRP-6, but share that
right.
story.
And I know, you know, there have been a lot of people out there, you know, pushing for Lance Stewart. And we're so glad that she's out and home with her family. And unfortunately, you know, she's in stage 4 cancer. And I think that was really part of the reason why this compassionate release by the director, Director Samuels of the Bureau of Prisons, why he wrote this letter to the judge, you know, on her behalf to release her. And my thing is with this is if you can do this on behalf of an inmate to get them released, we have been going back and forth with this man with letters and everything else, just trying to get him to do something about the situation that's going on with one of his employees and Warden Birkebile down there at the Florence prison camp.
That's right.
That's what we're asking him to do, you know, and just, you know, what's going on. They keep sending us these letters. Well, we've investigated and the warden says that the reason that, you know, that was done was because of security issues, this, that, and whatever. Don't tell me that every time the media has requested an interview with these guys, the IRP-6, down there at Florence Prison Camp. Let me say that again. It's a camp. No fences. It has no jack. People can walk right off. A camp. You know, they come back and tell you that because of security issues, they cannot do a telephone interview. Well, who's on the jackass line that's keeping them from doing a telephone interview because of security purposes?
That's right. That's right.
And the thing is, I mean, it's not like, you know, like they have their own personal landline or some cell phone that they're going to be making a call to. They're calling up from the prison phone. I mean, we had David Banks on before, and it's obvious where they're calling from. It says it every few minutes. This call is from a federal prison.
And it is recorded.
It's recorded. They can tap into the line and hear what's going on at any time. How is that a security risk?
Exactly.
Well, so the reporter is talking in code.
Yeah, okay.
this is ridiculous. But, I mean, it is part of an inmate's right to have access to the media, to be able to tell their story from their perspective. I mean, when they're in prison, like we all know, they don't really have a voice. If somebody is not out here, like, you know, a Just Cause that's screaming for them, that's basically taking their story and putting it out to the masses, nobody is doing anything for them. And so they have the right, they're supposed to have the right to talk to the media.
That's right.
To say, I want to call up and talk to this media person. If they will grant me an interview, I want to talk to
right.
them. And to have the establishment,
mm-hmm.
the warden, in this case, Warden Birkebile, to have him basically, you know, keep on with these
lies.
Yeah, these lies. I mean,
everything
cannot be a security issue.
That's
you
right.
know?
It's totally ridiculous.
And you know
come up with a different lie.
Exactly. Something. I, you know, just don't just. We sat down there and talked to that man and sat and looked right in his pale face, and he tells us, you know, we will allow these guys, I will allow them the extra time to talk to the media. He sat there and he looked in our faces and he told us this. You know, it's like, boy, it's amazing. People will look you straight in the eye and tell you a lie just as big as stank. And that's exactly what he did. It's like, okay, you remind him of this lie. Okay,
exactly.
And then he got some other little flunky running around telling you, well, the lie didn't work because of this reason.
That's right. That's right.
Ridiculous.
Excuse me,
that's
Randall
right.
Mitchell. You know what? I'm telling you, Randall Mitchell, I hope you are listening to this because you're going straight to hell for lying for your boss. You understand me?
Call him out, Ethel. Call him out.
I'm telling you.
A Dust Cause Coast to Coast. We will be right back in a few moments. This is a Dust Cause Coast to Coast where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Can you imagine spending 20 years of your life in prison for a crime you didn't commit? Neither could I until I got the opportunity to portray Betty Ann Waters in the film Conviction, telling the real story of how she freed her brother Kenny. Sadly, what happened to Kenny happens far more often than you might expect, but together we can stop it. Please join me in helping the Innocence Project fight injustice. Go to innocenceproject.org to make a donation and get involved.
Congress
shall make no law
respecting an establishment
of religion
or prohibiting the free exercise
thereof
or abridging the freedom of speech
or of the press
or the right
of the people peaceably
to assemble
and to petition
the government
for a redress of grievances.
Today, innocent Americans are standing trial for crimes they didn't commit. Today, innocent Americans are writing for help from a prison cell. Today, hundreds of Americans have been exonerated of crimes they didn't commit. Researchers believe that at least 40,000 innocent Americans still sit behind bars. For them, the answers do not come easy. A Just Cause seeks true balance and accountability in the judicial process, ensuring that innocent men and women are not convicted and sentenced to prison for trivial, obscure acts that are otherwise not seen as crimes. For more information on how A Just Cause may help you or how you can get involved to stop overcriminalization of innocent Americans, visit www.a-justcause.com or call 855-529-4252. That's 855-529-4252.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. Welcome to our first show of 2014. Cliff, Ethel, how you doing? You hanging in there?
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
All right.
Getting infuriated about all this stuff.
Oh, man. And we're getting ready to jump right in there and talk about IRP 6. And you know, we said we were going to reflect on some things from our programs from 2013, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. But before that, Ethel, let's come on and talk a little bit about the call to action. What can folks do to help the IRP 6?
Let me remind everybody that those digits, 202-514-2003-2005, those are the numbers for Attorney General Eric Holder's office. Call him and ask him to investigate the over 200 pages of missing transcript in the case of the IRP 6.
All right, and then another thing that we have going on also is change.org. Go out to change.org, sign the petition for the same reason that Ethel was talking about, to have Attorney General Eric Holder do an inquiry or an investigation into this situation of the IRP 6 and over 200 pages of a transcript that's missing that would exonerate the guys.
That's right.
You know, just the fact that the appellate court has not made a decision,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's atrocious. The fact that the judge, federal judge Christine Arguello, would not release the pages is atrocious. The fact that the court reporter, Darlene Martinez, did not give over the transcript when it was paid for is atrocious.
Okay.
Everything
And the fact that when Darlene Martinez got sued for delivering that transcript, that suddenly the U.S. Attorney's Office up in Denver under U.S. Attorney John Walsh now wants to represent her.
Okay.
And, you know, basically be there as her lawyer. Since when does the U.S. government become a lawyer for
the lay citizen. And they're trying to say, well, she's a government employee. Well, there are plenty of government employees that if a government employee goes out there and gets stopped on a DUI, I guarantee John Walsh's office is not coming to his defense.
Absolutely okay. not. Ethel, what else can folks do?
Well, we also want people to reach out to their local radio and TV stations and ask them, why haven't we heard about this case? Why is it not in the news? You know, we hear about it on different people, you know, talking about it from Colorado and with a Just Cause Coast to Coast. We hear it on Dr. Wilma Leon. Why haven't we heard about it here locally?
That's right. And talk about Dr. Wilma Leon on this Saturday.
That's right.
At 11 a.m. Eastern Time. What's going to be happening there?
Oh, Pastor Rose Banks, the mother of IRP 6 member David Banks and a mother-in-law of IRP 6 member Gary Walker. She will be talking. I tell you, you better make sure that if you are not used to hearing the truth, bring you a couple of Tylenols and you will be all right. She's going to tell it like it is.
And like we were saying earlier, you know, folks need to go out and listen to the archive of a previous show and then the archive of the show where you, Ethel, along with Pastor Banks,
yes.
were on Dr. Leon's show on December 21st.
Yes.
And that's going to be made available soon. And so folks don't want to miss that.
Don't
I mean, that
miss
was just
it.
That was just an awesome. And then as far as the Just Cause is concerned and IRP 6, if you'd like to get more information and follow along with us as we talk about it, you can go to a-justcause.com, a-justcause.com. Also, free the IRP 6. That's the number 6.org. Free the IRP6.org. And Cliff, you know, we were talking earlier about reflecting back on some shows from 2013. You know, one that jumped out to me because it was so enlightening. We were on Madness in Reality with Rippa, and Rippa is on Blog Talk Radio, and you know, that was just that was an incredible show. Rippa has a contributor. I'll call him a contributor.
Yes.
He is an attorney. The contributor is an attorney who goes under the call sign of the janitor.
Right, Mr. And Cleanup.
Yeah, he's a cleanup man. And he took a look at the IRP 6 case, and he came back with some serious findings. And, you know, that's one of the things where, again, you know, go out, folks, listen to the archive of that one, because, you know, one of the things you can appreciate about that, Cliff, is that janitor, he said, he was open with us. He said, you know, I came into this thing mm-hmm. as a skeptic. Because of the way this story was sounding, you know, and you can appreciate the fact that a man will come in as a skeptic and then come out on the
right.
other end and say, hey, something is terribly wrong here. Before we get into talking about what the janitor said, let's give a little bit of background on the case. Cliff, you know, the IRP 6 case is basically a corporate debt collection case.
Yes.
The elevator pitch sort of version of this is that you have a company that was being courted. IRP Solutions Corporation was developing software for federal, state, and local law enforcement. The company was being courted by the Department of Homeland Security in order to answer the call of the federal government. IRP Solutions engaged the services of IT staffing companies. Debt was incurred, and because that debt was not immediately paid, then folks start making accusations that IRP was not a legitimate company and that IRP was running a scam and all the other lies that are out there that you have heard or as you followed us on this program. But the bottom line is this was a debt collection case. You had two grand juries. One grand jury heard several witnesses. That grand jury even said, this is a debt collection case.
Right.
Why are we listening to it? A second grand jury was convened, and that's another part of this thing that just stinks.
Right.
And
exactly.
Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch convened a second grand jury, and he only calls one witness. That witness being an FBI agent, Moen.
Yes.
And come back with an indictment, and then that's when the wheels of injustice started to turn. And so you have a situation here where you have a company that is owed debt. That debt got criminalized, and now we have six men sitting in prison. So, again, you can go to justcause.com and get more details. I mean, there are detailed transcripts and everything out there. But when the janitor looked at this situation, Cliff, mm-hmm. what did he come back with?
Yeah, he came back, and he said, well, his three biggest issues, and they were things that, you know, we had kind of looked at before. But, I mean, he's an attorney, and so he knows when he's looking at a case – and the things that happen and what goes on, you know, we were saying, well, you know, you got 200 pages of missing transcript. You have a judge that violated the Fifth Amendment right of defendants by forcing them to testify. He said when he looked at it that the three things that he found most atrocious were the fact that the judge did not recuse herself, and the reason that she should have is because one of the staffing companies that was engaged with IRP Solutions was ETI Professionals. Well, one of their executives, Susan Holland, she has inroads to Holland & Hart. She has a relationship with Greg Goldberg, who is a partner at Holland & Hart. She reaches out to him. Greg Goldberg reaches out to Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, who was the prosecutor on the case. And it's like friends calling in favors because this thing kept rolling. As Sam said, you know, they convened two grand juries to ensure they got an indictment. But the sickest part of that is that the judge, Judge Christine Arguello, used to be a partner at Holland & Hart Law Firm. She actually worked with Greg Goldberg. And when the defense brought that to her attention to say, hey, you know, Judge Arguello, you were a partner at this law firm. You know Greg Goldberg. You have a conflict of interest here. And what the janitor told us is, you know, when there is a conflict of interest, it does not even have to be a conflict that is real true. It can be perceived, if it's perceived by the public that there is a conflict of interest, that a judge should recuse themselves. And, you know, he, just for to ensure that we understood where he was coming from, he said, this is not an implication of a conflict of interest. This is a real conflict of interest. This is a judge that worked at a law firm that was a partner that is totally and completely tied to what's going on. He said that issue right there, the judge should have walked away. What did she do when it was brought to her attention? She says, I only knew Greg Goldberg in passing, you know, so I'm not going to recuse myself. His second area of contention, Andrew Alvarelli, who was an expert witness, and he was going to testify on behalf of the defense to say the way that they did business with these staffing companies is the way business is done.
That's
Andrew
right.
owns a staffing company. He's been in the industry for about 20 years now, and his credentials are immaculate. There's nothing that you could say that this man is not an expert in the field of staffing. The judge, when Prosecutor Matthew Kirsch, he basically, when Andrew Alvarelli gets on the stand, he says, no, you know, he wanted him to be taken down as a expert witness. And he was removed as an expert witness by the judge. And the judge basically puts him off the stand and out of the courtroom saying, you cannot testify. And I talked to Andrew today, and he told me that he was just an expert witness in another case about 6 months ago.
Wow.
And he still to this day is trying to figure out, you know, why are they claiming that I got taken down off the stand? Why are they saying that I shouldn't be allowed as an expert witness when I've been doing this for 20 years? He still is baffled. And, you know, he does a lot of traveling. So he just got back to the States a little while ago. And he was totally, totally infuriated by the fact when I told him that the guys are spending time in federal prison down in Florence, Colorado.
And, you know, Cliff, if I can interject there, you know, I decided, okay, let me pull up this thing from the United States courts. And it is the Code of Conduct for United States judges.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were talking about the appearance of impropriety.
Mm-hmm.
And it says federal judges abide by the Code of Conduct for United States judges, a set of ethical principles and guidelines adopted by the Judicial Conference of the United States. The Code of Conduct provides guidance for judges on issues of judicial integrity and independence. I'm about to start laughing here. Judicial diligence and impartiality,
right.
Permissible extrajudicial activities, and the avoidance of impropriety or even its appearance. Now, here's the next one. It says judges may not hear cases in which they have either personal knowledge of the disputed facts, a personal bias concerning a party to the case, earlier involvement in the case as a lawyer, which doesn't apply here, but or a financial interest in any party or subject matter of the case. This thing about personal knowledge of the facts,
exactly.
Personal bias. I mean,
this judge and the prosecutor, did the case of LaWanna Clark and knew all the facts.
All the facts.
About this case. She should have walked away for more than the reason.
Immediately.
Yeah. And if not for that, it's like, okay, well, okay, if you say you don't remember, okay, great. What about the fact that you were a partner in this law firm that's bringing this all
right.
up?
Hey, we're going to come back to this after the break. Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Don't go anywhere.
If you don't stop your friend from drinking and driving, you're as good as dead. Drinking and driving can kill a friendship.
When I was diagnosed with breast cancer, both of my daughters were pregnant, and everything I was looking forward to turned into everything I was going to miss. First words, first steps, being there for my grandchildren, for my daughters. Today, those babies are three. I'm with them all the time. I don't know what's next, but I know I'm here today. My name is Alanthea Pena, and I'm Susan G. Komen.
When does it stop being partly cloudy and start being partly sunny? Why is the word abbreviation so long? Are English muffins just muffins in England? Why is it called a washing line and not a drying line? Do fish get thirsty? If ghosts can walk through doors, why don't they fall through floors? Do you yawn when you sleep? If prunes are dried plums, how do they make prune juice? Why do doctors leave the room when you change? They're going to see you naked anyway. Do bald chefs wear hairnets? How much deeper would the ocean be if all the sponges were taken out? Do you believe someone who says they're a chronic liar? Why is sandwich bread square and sandwich meat round? Life's full of hard questions. Ask one more. You might just save a life.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. Let's get back to talking about the IRP 6. And Cliff, we were talking about one of the doing a reflection on one of the shows that we did in 2013 on Madness and Reality with RIPA, and how the janitor had one of the contributors to RIPA's show. The janitor had provided some insight into the IRP 6 case. And we were just talking about, you know, judges that, or the judge, Judge Christine Arguello, how she should have recused herself. And then you were sharing some other thoughts, Cliff, as to some of the other things that Ripper was talking about.
Right. And when you look at, you know, I was thinking on the break, looking at that rule, that guideline that's laid out for federal judges, I mean, it's so simple and it's so easy for a judge to say, I mean, it's set there to say, hey, if I think there could be an issue or I think the public could lose its trust and the public might construe my relationship with someone, my knowledge of something as an issue, I step away. It's that simple. It's so easy. Judge Arguello had at least two strikes against her where she broke that rule of ethics. Like we said, she was part of the LaWanna Clark case where, you know, LaWanna Clark was brought up on charges of perjury, wrongly convicted in connection to the IRP case, and then sent to federal prison for 6 months.
Exactly.
And there, the evidence was in the judge's hand. Yes, this same judge, Christine Arguello, the evidence was in her hand. I mean, not some evidence that it could go one way or another. This was based off handwriting. They said LaWanna Clark signed a deposit or withdrawal slip on her own account, and she said that she didn't. Well, the handwriting expert proved that she did not. The judge had that and still said, no, you know, we're going to – you should have brought that in earlier. We're going to go ahead and, you know, teach you a lesson. And then makes this brash statement of – you know, I'm going to send a message about lying to a grand jury. Well, there was no lie done. The message you're sending is that you're a crook, Judge Christine Arguello, and that you are not concerned about justice, that you're only concerned about getting the conviction, and that when it comes in your courtroom, you help out the prosecutor in the case to ensure that not only LaWanna Clark got convicted, but the IRP6 as well. And the janitor brought that up saying she definitely should have stepped off. And that is a serious ethics violation that she should be brought up before the bar dealing with that.
You know, that kind of strikes me as funny when she says that this handwriting information should have been introduced earlier. I mean, isn't that the same thing that they said about the gentleman, the expert, one of the expert witnesses' letter that he had written to John Walsh about the dealings of the IT industry? That is exactly the same thing. She said they didn't get that information in time.
Right, exactly. That was the Andrew Alberelli letter where they said, well, we didn't get the information in time. He turned in that letter more than 2 months prior. How long does it take? And this is what's stupid, just stupid about it, is that Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, who prosecuted the case, his thing was, well, yeah, you sent it to the office, but you didn't have my name on it. Well, it had the case number. John Walsh is not that big of a moron that he can't pass on and say, hey, who's working on case number so-and-so and so-and-so? I got a letter from an expert witness here. And he was on the witness list. If there was an issue, Matthew Kirsch could have brought it up then and say, you have Andrew Alberelli on the witness list. We don't have his credentials. So you know he was lying.
That's a pattern of lies.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the court, when they pulled Andrew off the stand, he had the letter right there. Well, this is a letter he sent to the office, but it wasn't addressed to me. It's like, it has the case number on there, you idiot.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's this stuff is not only baffling, but it's infuriating because you understand that this is common sense, normal, everyday stuff. If you get a letter that comes to your house or your office and it has something, if it's got your name on it, if it doesn't have your name on it, you know, you say, hey, a box came here from Amazon. You open it up. Oh, this is a shoe size 12. My wife is not going to say, well, I didn't know that was Cliff's shoe. Maybe that was our 12-year-old son's shoe. Maybe it was her shoe. She doesn't wear that size. She knows it's got to be mine.
That's right.
Oh,
that's right.
And so that was what he tried to say was the reason that Andrew Alberelli wasn't allowed to be an expert witness. And the janitor said in situations where even if Andrew Alberelli had just been presented when he came up on the stand, that typically what would happen is the judge would call a recess, would have that witness, the prosecutor's attorney, and then the defense attorney basically sit down in front of the judge with this witness and interview him and say, tell us about your credentials. Mm-hmm. Tell us where you've been. Mm-hmm. Prove that what you say on this sheet of paper is who you are. And, I mean, Andrew Alberelli is not a scrub. This man has done work for the FBI in fraud cases. He's part of InfraGuard, which is the FBI's information technology, fraud investigation arm. He's part of that. So it's not like they don't know who Andrew Alberelli is. They absolutely know who he was.
They just why they didn't want him in there.
And that's it. They did not want him in there. And that's why he was saying today, like, you know, Cliff, I'm not getting why they didn't let me be a witness. And I'm like, Andrew, the bottom line is that, you know, they knew that what
that's
you would say would be enough that the jury would see that, you know, this whole thing is a farce.
That's
and it should be thrown out.
That's right.
But then the other issue that the janitor brought up was about the validity of the software.
Mm-hmm.
Don Vilfer of Cal Forensics did, at the behest of the government, did an analysis, a forensics analysis of the Silk software that at the time of the raid to say, okay, is this software real? Because, you know, on the search warrant that special agent in charge, John Smith of the FBI, and that search warrant that he got, that he wrote an affidavit to a federal judge for, he lied saying IRP Solutions is a purported software company, meaning they're just a front. They say they're creating software. They're not. They're basically just there committing crime and don't have a viable product. Well, Don Vilfer of Cala Forensics, he basically did this forensics analysis and came back and said how viable the software was, how it could be used for law enforcement, how it could be used at the federal level, at the state level, at the local level, and basically said that this software could be used at the levels where IRP was marketing that. So this shows that we have a product. We're trying to market it to sell it to be able to pay our debts and, you know, obviously turn a profit. But he said with the fact that the software was viable, that Andrew Albarelli was not allowed to testify and that the software was viable and that wasn't allowed to be brought up in trial, that Andrew Albarelli's testimony was not allowed at trial, and that the judge did not recuse herself, he's like, something is going on here. Mm-hmm. This judge is standing in the way and ensuring that there is a conviction.
That's right.
And it's so troubling when you look at it. You say, okay, this is supposed to be the American judicial system. We always say, oh, it's the best in the world. But when we start doing research on it, and when we look at it and say, you know, you can't say it's the best in the world if it's not working, if it's broken, if
That's
it's
right.
continuing to imprison innocent people.
That's right.
If it's continuing to put in, I mean, just like this Mr. Angelo's being put in prison for 55 years for $350 worth of marijuana for this prosecutor who went to jail for 9 days after a man spent 25 years in prison for all the exoneree moments
That's
that we've
right.
had with people in prison for 10, 15, 20, 25, 35 years
yes.
and locked in solitary confinement, and then to come to find out they were never supposed to be there in the first place. How do you call that the best system? How do we stand in front of the rest of the world and say, no, this is the best system. We have the best when it continues to fail us. We're
That's
supposed
exactly
to be, you know, basically the watchdog for the globe.
Yeah.
And if America that always says, you know, democracy and we're going to do it right, we're about, you know, justice for all. If we don't uphold that standard, how do we stand in front of anybody else? That's just like if you have your kid and you say, don't smoke. It'll cause you cancer, and you'll end up dying from lung cancer if you continue to smoke. But you're puffing away on 10 packs a day. How do you tell your kid not to do that? It makes no sense. It's the same way we are with the rest of the world. If we're going to say, you know, human rights and justice and all this, then we need to start with it at home.
That's and you know right. what, Cliff? I like something that you often refer to, and that being a judge is supposed to be a referee. And, you know, one of the other things that was pointed out during that particular show that we were making reference to a moment ago is the fact that the judge, Judge Arguello, seemed to resent the fact that the guys represented themselves pro se.
Exactly.
And he made reference to the fact that generally if someone represents themselves pro se, then the judge is going to even be a little more lenient because of the fact that, you know, you're not dealing with trained attorneys. You know,
That's
you're dealing
right.
with folks who did an excellent job, of course. I mean, all the feedback that we got and from attorneys that were in the courtroom said that the guys did a stellar job as far as the research, preparation, having case law available, and even their arguments and understanding, you know, how to proceed. But even that being the case, it was clear that Judge Arguello was not, you know, acting as a referee.
Right.
And what did Janner say? It seemed as though she held them to a higher
standard than trained attorneys, to a higher standard. When a defendant is pro se, is representing themselves, the judge is supposed to be there to ensure that they do not get walked on by the prosecutor, that they do not get taken advantage of because of their lack of training, because of any ignorance that they would have about the law. The judge is supposed to ensure that they are protected. That is what a judge is for. But instead, you have Judge Christine Arguello that's blasting them for these things that they didn't do, that as a not being a trained attorney, how would they know how to do it?
Exactly. We're going to talk a little bit more about this when we come back from this next break. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. We'll be right back in a moment.
I wanted to be in the military since I was a kid.
I served in the United States Air Force.
I served a total of 16 years.
I was deployed 13 times.
On my second deployment, 4 bombs hit my vehicle.
And at 19 years old, that's the first time I ever saw somebody die.
Coming back, I was raging.
I started having pretty horrible nightmares.
I would wake up in the middle of the night, sweats.
I started drinking a lot.
I felt worthless.
I guess I never recognized it in myself.
Eventually, one day, I just walked into the VA hospital and said I'd like to see somebody.
Don't suffer alone. You got to find that link with somebody that'll make you let it go.
It all starts with going to the VA. There's a whole community of veterans that just want to help you out.
It's for the guys who couldn't come back, so you owe it to them to live well, because they're not here with their families.
Federal government targeted, prosecutors convicted, 6 executives in, held back evidence, hundreds of pages of missing manuscripts, court circuit, 10th district denying the writ of mandamus, read RP6, critical rights violations, scandalous, their motivation is finished, they finished with major companies, the government, New York PD, DHS, potential customers, faith attempt to obtain funding from banks and angel investors with no success, that calm melt down, finance skeptics, so they hire staffing companies to fill the gap with every attention to fulfill the contract, fill the deal when money come back. Everybody paid the bills, the wages, take care of all of that. No Friday, they got viable software, but you compare them to those with nothing to offer. Prosecuted by the attorney's office before the FBI gotta start investigating charges, skipping steps in the process, even barring the testimony of Andrew Alvarez, a witness who could care why any staffing company that could do a Dunbar Street credit check would stick out their neck if there was no prospect they could collect. When they're reeling the net, it all relates to Harvey Silver's late statements about the vagueness of federal law, judicial chaos, A_justcause. Read at rp6.org, 347-205-9620, just blog. It's just us, but we don't gotta just talk. We can just march to the courts for the cause with one voice. It's just free them all. Come on.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, that was Dallas Burgess and one of Ethel's most favorite songs. No, that we really appreciate what Dallas has done in writing the Free the IRP6 anthem. Yes. And that can be found out on our website, AJCRadio.com, AJCRadio.com. And we want folks to go out there, you know, listen to Dallas's song, send him a comment. Dallas now has over right around 1,200 hits.
Wow.
on SoundCloud. And, again, it's posted on our website as well. And so, you know, several folks have written songs. Jay Arrington wrote a song as well for the IRP6. And then Tiffany Stewart, which we heard her song earlier in the program. And Tiffany is the daughter of Clint Stewart, who is one of the IRP6. And so, you know, people are sharing their sentiments through music and song, so to speak. And, again, we appreciate that. So, Cliff, as far as things that are coming in store in the next few days and some, you know, just bringing folks up to speed with the IRP6, where do we stand right now?
Well, we will be, you know, basically having a the initial hearing as far as in the suit against the court reporter. You know, Mark Garagos and company is working on that. And they will be, you know, basically having the hearing for all the scheduling on that against that court reporter and the fact that she is not willing to release those 200 pages of missing transcript that she's holding on to, and the judge will not force her to do it. And, you know, that does bring up another issue, you know, back on what we were saying about the janitor. And one of the things that he said is that, you know, in his time being an attorney, that he hasn't heard of anything like this, that, you know, a judge would hold on to 200 pages of a missing transcript. Because in a federal case, if a defendant does not have their transcript to wage their appeal, then typically it's just thrown out. Because the only thing that can be dealt with is what was said and what was recorded in court. And so if you have a defendant that is basically saying, I heard one thing in court that the judge said, and the judge is saying, well, no, I said something else, that transcript is the way that they would clear that up. And without that being available, how does the appellate court do anything but throw that out? And so that's what the janitor was saying. It's like, well, this thing should have been tossed out a long time ago. If not totally thrown out, then, you know, given a chance at another trial. And at the very least, that the men would be out on, you know, bond pending appeal.
Exactly.
And for that not to have happened is another troubling part. And, you know, speaking of Mark Garagos, he was on Dr. Wilmer Leon's show with us a few weeks back, mm-hmm. and he even said that in his 31 years of practice, he has never seen anything like this. Mm-hmm. Now, he's never seen a judge that is willfully, blatantly, and admittedly holding on to over 200 pages, yeah, of a transcript in a federal case that the defense is pleading for, is begging for, that the defense says in the contents of this missing part of the transcript, the judge is violating our Fifth Amendment right and force one of us to take the stand. He said he's never seen that in 31 years of practice.
And what about due process?
Exactly. Where is due process? Where is the fact that you charge me with something, you take me to court, and if you convict me and you convict me wrongly, even if you properly convict me, I have the right to appeal.
Yeah.
If you're holding on to the evidence, a transcript is evidence. It is the one thing that the appeals court makes their decision off of. It's like, where is the entire transcript so we can make a proper decision? Where is the appellate judge saying, without this transcript, let these men out, and the case goes out the window?
And, you know, Cliff, and I go back to your analogy as far as a referee is concerned, and I don't know why this thought hit my mind the other day, but maybe it was because I was sitting looking at football. But, you know, in football, you have referees that are,
exactly,
on the field.
Right there in the middle, right, of the play.
And they're calling plays or calling penalties and keeping the thing moving. And they're supposed to be impartial and so forth. And so you have situations, though, when a referee makes a call,
right,
and then the coach says, I don't agree with that. I think you made a mistake.
Let's get an instant review.
Exactly. And do you see the referees in this situation? They do not go and up face to face with the coach and says, I'm not going to give that to,
exactly,
you.
Exactly. Like,
yeah,
like,
what, you, it's like, you have no right to that. It's like, okay, no, you get however many challenges it is per,
right,
game. Okay, you're challenging what I said. So the referee goes and he looks at a monitor and he reviews the play. Sometimes that referee will reverse his call himself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that referee will say, well, I really can't tell, so I got to go upstairs now
right.
and check with the other officials above me to see if, you know, what's going on with this, because I really can't tell.
Mm-hmm.
But even in those situations, a referee, if he made a bad call, no big deal. He says, hey, I made right. a bad call. We're going to reverse this.
Yes, yes. The play after the referee says, after further review, the play will be reversed. There was no penalty. There was a penalty. There was a
exactly.
touchdown. There wasn't a touchdown. He caught the ball. He didn't catch it. He was inbounds, out of bounds. But you never see a referee, you know, putting on the veil over the monitor and saying, yeah, I looked at it, but I'm not giving you guys what I saw on that monitor.
Exactly.
You're the fans, the teams, mm-hmm. you're not you can't see what I'm seeing.
And you know what, Cliff? And I think one of the things too, you know, you got the jumbotrons.
Right.
So, you know, you got 100,000 fans in the stands,
yeah,
and they're watching this thing over and over, and yeah, not even counting the folks that are on television or watching via television, and they're watching the replays as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a just cause is the jumbotron.
That's it.
You know,
and you know, you have it would if the referee comes out and says, you know, after further review, and everybody's seen on the jumbotron that, you know what, he was 2 yards in bounds, had both feet down, caught the ball, and got pushed out of bounds, but still held onto the ball. If the referee comes back and say, after further review, the player did not catch the ball, he was out of bounds, he never even had possession, the whole crowd would go crazy.
Absolutely.
Everybody at home would go crazy. ESPN would get their Twitter accounts, their Facebook accounts, their chat rooms would get blown up. Like, whoever this referee is, he needs to be taken out. He does not need to be officiating, because obviously he's either senile
That's
or
right.
he has a bet on the game. He would basically get ostracized, and by the next morning, the commissioner would be coming out saying the referee is on suspension.
Without pay.
Without pay. We're trying to figure out why he would make the call. And the commissioner would admit, obviously, that was a bad call by the referee. So Judge Arguello, as the referee, mm-hmm. you need to be suspended, put off the bench, fired. Commissioner
Thank
Eric
you.
Holder,
there you go.
You need to step up in front
go.
Of the camera and say, hey, you know, this judge has obviously lost her mind. She's not giving the defendants their transcript. Something is wrong here. We need to find out what's going on. But until further review, she's not going to be on the bench. She's been stripped of her robe, and she might be going to jail here pretty soon for the things that she's done.
There you go. I mean, you know, it's
Sounds
just
good.
It that type of check and balance, it works in other areas of our society.
And it's common sense.
Why doesn't it work in the court system?
Because a federal judge has too much power.
There you go, Ethel.
Exactly.
Too much.
Yep.
Okay, more power than the president of the United States. My
yep.
goodness.
Yep.
How are you immune from prosecution?
How?
We'd all love to be immune from prosecution.
That's right.
Well, not just immune, but do whatever you want
right.
to do.
Exactly.
Just
you
like
know?
And then have immunity.
Okay.
It should be a federal crime for a judge to, I mean, they need to get rid of this harmless error thing.
Yeah.
If a judge does something knowingly during a case, that judge should be stripped.
Exactly.
It's like, get off the bench. Obviously, you're not a judge. You're not judging a situation. You're trying to force the outcome that you want. And
yeah.
and that should not be. That
exactly.
that is against the law, but it should be prosecuted. It should be upheld. There should be a law that says these judges and the crooked prosecutors, that they can be prosecuted, and they should go to jail, not for 9 days like
mm-hmm,
Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Anderson.
Anderson,
yeah.
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 Not 9 days. Go for some real time. I mean, it's like, yeah, thank you for putting the story out there. But
mm-hmm.
this 9-day crap needs to be thrown
but
out.
But like you said, it should be against the law. It is against the law when you or I do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that's when it's against the law.
Well, they should be held to the same standard.
Yeah, they should.
That's
Absolutely.
The problem.
That's
they
right.
should be held to the same,
exact same.
Standard.
That's right. That's
and they
right.
should not be put in this situation of being put up on a pedestal.
That's right.
And when you walk into this into the courtroom, and you know, the marble and the and the polished wood and, mm-hmm. and all this.
And wrong doesn't have a name on it. If you're wrong, you're wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, we're on the downside here in a few minutes here, and so when we come back from this break, we're going to touch on a couple of other things that we talked about in 2013, and then also talk about how folks can help the IRP6. And this is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We will be right back in a moment.
I'm a mother.
I'm a father.
I'm a sister.
A registered nurse.
I serve my country in the United States military.
I'm your neighbor.
I sit next to you at church.
And my child was
arrested,
held in custody,
questioned without my knowledge,
exposed to violence,
witnessed to rape,
placed in solitary confinement,
unable to call or see me,
shackled to a wall,
beaten,
sentenced as an adult at age 17,
sentenced as an adult at age 16,
sentenced as an adult at age 15.
We felt lost,
isolated,
ostracized,
misjudged,
terrified,
and in the absence of all hope, my child took his own life.
And then I found the Alliance for Youth Justice.
They gave me the support and resources to get through one of the most difficult times in my life.
Now I know I'm not alone.
And neither are you.
Now we have a voice.
Now we have power.
In numbers.
In numbers.
In numbers.
We can make a difference.
There are approximately 2 million children in the juvenile and criminal justice system in this country. These are the faces of those families. If you are the family member of a child who has been in the justice system, or if you are someone who supports this movement and is ready to make a difference, visit the Campaign for Youth Justice at www.campaignforyouthjustice.org.
Police Department.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
A dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie.
I think the hoodie is as much responsible for Trayvon Martin's death as George Zimmerman was.
Do I look suspicious?
Do I look suspicious?
Am I suspicious?
This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining and he's just walking around looking about.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
You have to recognize that this whole stylizing yourself as a gangster, you're going to be a gangster wannabe, well, people are going to perceive you as a menace.
I am here to continue the research to fight cancer.
To protect and serve.
To prosper in real estate.
I am here to be a pediatrician.
I'm here to protect my children and my grandchild.
To fight for justice.
To write the next great American movie.
To give a voice to the voiceless.
I'm here to foster a generation of young black entrepreneurs.
I am here to live.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Trayvon Martin.
We are Trayvon Martin.
It's time to wake up. This could happen to you.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez. We're on the home stretch on our first program of 2014. Cause Coast to Coast on Contending for Truth Radio this evening. You know, Cliff, as we were during the break, you know, I started thinking about the latest press release that we came out with, and it was talking about letters that Gary Walker, one of the IRP6, letters that Gary wrote in 2006 and in 2009 to the former FBI director, Robert Mueller. And in these letters, you know, we often talk about the fact that, and like you were saying earlier in the program, Ethel, where Warden Birkenbaum was like, you know, well, why do you guys want to, you know, talk to the media?
Right.
Well, it's because we're innocent.
Exactly.
It's like if you are guilty or if someone is guilty, yeah, they're going to run it as quickly as possible. They're going to be hiding behind everything to try and ensure that they are not exposed to the media, that their story is not told. You know, they want to maintain that that secrecy, so
to
speak.
Right.
But when you're innocent and when you have been wrongly convicted, you want everyone to know about it. So,
yeah.
You know, Gary sent letters to Director Mueller and basically saying, hey, you know, Mr. Mueller, we are innocent. We have an FBI investigation going on here, so we're coming right to the top man and ask you to, you know, intercede here. We are doing nothing wrong. And basically, you know, Gary wrote basically that that IRP Solutions was working with the Department of Homeland Security, and even the FBI office at that time provided references to IRP Solutions for retired federal agents. And Cliff, that's what you were talking about before.
Yeah, exactly.
You had federal agents that were working inside of IRP Solutions. Now, someone sitting out there, they may say, well, yeah, the FBI, they planted those folks there. But we know that, you know, based on the affidavits,
right.
No, you had federal agents that were working there who believed in IRP Solutions. They believed in the software, and they were working for free. I was reviewing that contract that Gary Hilberry had signed. I was reviewing that the other day. And his contract clearly states that he would be paid upon the sale of the software.
Right.
And, you know, there was nothing cricket going on, nothing under the table, nothing underhanded.
That's
Mr. Hilberry, as well as the other federal agents, they knew exactly what was going on. Mr. Hilberry conveyed that to John Smith, and there was no reason for IRP to be raided. And that those letters, they can find them out there on PRWeb.com. And all you got to do is go to PRWeb.com and put in, you know, IRP Solutions or put in a just cause. And you will see where Gary, you know, he poured his heart out there.
Yeah,
and I know you saw those letters, Ethel.
Yeah.
And what did you think when you read Gary's letter?
You know, and knowing Gary, knowing who he is, you know, and the rest of the IRP 6, that it stuck a dagger in my heart because of how he poured his heart out to this man, and this man so cold and never even responded to him. How could you read a letter such as this and not even respond? You know, that is just, you have to have a jackass, cold heart, stone heart made of ice and everything else that I mean, this is just ridiculous.
And, you know, Gary, he spelled it out from the standpoint of, you know, our business got raided by over 20 federal agents. We are working on software to help the government, and this investigation is impeding our ability to do business. You got agents that are purposely impeding our ability to do business, and he's just asking for assistance.
That's right.
If you're doing something crooked, if you're involved in a scam, you're not going to go to the top man of the FBI,
right, and bring more attention
to yourself.
Okay.
And what is, you know, just really gets you and burns you about this is when Gary sent this letter out and saying, you know, this is a cry for help. We need to continue on our road to try to do business, to try to help out our nation, to try to get something to ensure that another 9/11 doesn't happen. And what does the former director Mueller do? He sends it back to to the local office saying,
that's
okay,
right.
Well, I'm gonna forward your letter back to the people
that you're accusing.
That you're accusing. So I'm not only going to ignore you, but I'm gonna let them know that now you're complaining about.
You
so
know
it and that type of stuff just burns you up because
it does.
Then they wanna say, oh no, we do everything that we can in the Department of Justice to ensure that our citizens are protected and that, you know, justice is what it is. You're not about justice. You're about protecting the interests of those who work for you.
And when you got this man who is at the top, okay, who would rather see 6 IT executives go to prison rather than allowing them to complete the sale of a software that could protect this country. Something is wrong with that. Something is wrong with this man. Something, I mean, somebody else ought to be looking at him and saying, why didn't he do something about this? Why didn't he reach out and help these guys if they had a software that was going to protect this country?
That's right.
Somebody should be asking those questions, and somebody ought to be Eric Holder. Get off your dump and do something.
That's absolutely right. That is absolutely right. And, you know, and like you were saying, Cliff, you know, to turn around and send the letter back to the
right.
to the office of the folks that you're saying that you're being done wrong by, you know, something's wrong with it. I mean, we've seen this case, you know, situation after situation with the IRP6 case. You look at the proffer, and again, you know, folks can go out to freetheirp6.org. The proffer summary that the IRP6 submitted to U.S. Attorney John Walsh, they spell it out even in there.
Yeah.
They're saying, okay, here's what we did. Here's why we did it.
Yes.
And then they signed an agreement with the U.S. Attorney's office. Basically, the U.S. Attorney said, okay, I'll take your proffer. I'll read it. But just beware that, you know, if you state anything in here that is a lie, then we can hold that against you. There were no lies.
Exactly.
No one came back to them and said, hey, your proffer was full of a bunch of lies.
Exactly.
And so, hey, not only are we going to prosecute you under these trumped-up charges that we're already getting you on, we're going to bring some more because of the fact that you're trying to present some other stuff to
us.
Nobody ever came back and said that what was in that proffer was a lie.
That's right. And what really gets you about John Walsh is that, you know, you really understand who he is as a man, that he's just – he wants his office to get that conviction because after he looks at the proffer and sees that there's no crime here, no criminal activity, what does he say? Well, okay, yeah, I looked over your proffer. I still need you to basically take a plea deal and say you conspired to commit a crime. We'll throw the wire fraud and the mail fraud out, but we need to get you on this conspiracy so I can get a win. I can get a check mark in my win column. It's full of crap.
No man, he's a jackass. That's exactly what he is.
So Ethel, we got a few minutes left here, so let's give a couple of shout outs, but let's give folks information as to how they can help the IRP6, what we need them to do, who we need them to call, you know, and so forth.
I need you to get on the phones and call the Attorney General Eric Holder at 202-514-2003, 2005. Tell him to get off his dump and do something. And do an inquiry and investigation into the over 200 pages of missing transcript for the IRP6.
And they can also go to change.org and sign that petition. We are trying to get Attorney General Eric Holder to do something as far as an inquiry. And, you know, like we were saying earlier today, Cliff, when you and I were talking, you know, they did it in the Ted Stevens case.
Exactly.
And like you so clearly articulated on that call, on that conference call earlier today, Cliff, why does someone have to be a senator or a congressman or some high-profile friend of someone who is high in government in order to draw attention?
Right, to get justice. Why do you have to be some political figure? Why are they the only ones who get justice?
Or a celebrity.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
that's
and
right.
So we want folks also to follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Send comments. You know, we need support. Cliff, what else are we looking for as far as the high-profile support?
Yeah, I mean, if you know anyone, if you have a platform out there that's on a federal level that would help us propel this case, that would help us get this information out there so that we can help to fight this injustice, we make a plea to you that, you know, give us a call, send us an email, let us know that you're out there, that you can help us to continue to put this out there, to let everybody know. I mean, we need to bring this on a national level and show that, you know, yeah, we love America, but we need to ensure that the American systems uphold what it is that they're forcing their citizens to do. They should not be immune. If you say do it, you should do it.
And if we love America, does America love us?
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we got letters going out to a lot of different folks as far as on the conservative movement in this country. And so, you know, we're reaching out to a lot of folks. And so someone out there knows someone who can help to bring about change in this situation. We have six men who are sitting in federal prison right now. You got Gary Walker, David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Ken Bonk. And Clinton, did I say Clinton already?
Yes.
So, and we got folks that are sitting in prison who need to be home.
Yeah. Exactly.
They're sitting there over 200 pages of a transcript that have not been released. We want to thank Mark Garagos and Tina Glandian and Gwendolyn Solomon and Cornell Johnson for the work that they're doing as far as that lawsuit. But, you know, if someone can make a phone call and get the guys home tomorrow, hey, make it happen.
Tonight is good, too.
Absolutely. So, Cliff, let's give some thanks out.
Yeah, we want to say thanks to everybody in the chat room who came to join us tonight. We appreciate it. To K&D Production, we got Dustin Jackson and Captain Kyle running the boards, along with Ill Skillers Girl. We appreciate you guys. Also, to the AJC Radio Production Support Team. We appreciate you. Couldn't get it done without you. And to the truth, we know that you out there, and we appreciate you.
And Olivia, we love you.
Absolutely. Hey, tune in to SiriusXM Radio again on Saturday, this Saturday. That's January 4th, 2014, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And Pastor Rose Banks will be on with Dr. Wilbur Leon. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. On behalf of Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez, I'm Sam Thurman. Good night, America.
Good night.
Good night, y'all.